Welcome to the Casey Catch Up, and this week we've got a special guest, Toby Moss, and we were just chatting before. We've got a bit more in common than I guess I originally thought. It's the first time I've met Toby, but thanks for jumping on, Toby. Pleasure to chat to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, stoked.
So realistically, this podcast, the Casey Catch Up, is all about downwind foiling, and you know, epic adventures and a bit of a history, how you got into it, and a bit of a few tips and tricks, I guess, to help you get downwind foiling. But Toby's got a pretty similar background to me, although he's about 10 years younger than me. Toby, tell us about your history, like in water sports, and I guess a bit of a, you know, basically, Toby, you're a veteran at a young age. So, yeah, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, so I was born and raised in Hawaii, so growing up here, pretty much surrounded by it, and got into surfing and paddling at a pretty young age. Started probably, I don't know, like 6 or 7, started paddling. And so grew up doing all regatta stuff, all the sprint stuff, and that just carried over, and it was natural. Just loved to surf, loved to paddle. So I think around like 12 or 13, I started stand-up surfing. We're pretty good buddies with the Janellas, Noah Janella on the North Shore. And at the time he was riding with Kai. And so he had some of Kai's old boards from that Tahiti clip, where he broke it. And so he basically just gave me a couple of the boards, and that's kind of what started the whole stand-up passion. And then everything just carried, got into long distance racing. Paddled with KLK and kind of traveled the world, went to Worlds for six men, and went to Tahiti for Teto, all the Va'a stuff, and then all the downwind stuff. So I think when I was like 14 and I started SUP racing, and so I guess that would have been the time when you were racing too. So started doing multi around 14. Before I got into doing the Hawaii, I wasn't old enough to do the Hawaii yet. So yeah, it was pretty much just stand-up racing. Had a couple pretty flat years, a couple pretty good years. And then took a little hiatus and really just focused on trying to win the Molokai Hawaii. And then, man, the foils just got so good. I started foiling when I was like 16 on the super old, ancient slingshot stuff.
Right.
Like that giant blue one, or, you know, it was like the time when oil was just coming out too. I loved it, but I just, you know, I didn't have the funds to chase it as a sport. There's so much progression. It was like every other week, it was like new foil. And so I kind of just put it down for a couple of years, and recently back in like December, I was like, all right, stuff looks good. It looks insane now. And so reached out to Jack and was like, hey, what's good? He's like, code looks pretty sick. Their stuff looks good. And so grabbed one of your guys' foils, and it's been crazy. Absolutely psycho ever since.
Yeah, no, it's been good to chat to you back and forth a little bit about like the different setups you're using, the different runs you're doing over there. I kind of want to dive a bit more back into, you know, how you got into the stand-up stuff. And so just for the Janellas, like back when I was competing, I hung out a bit with Noah, and legend, let's see.
Yeah.
Such the clip that stands out to me was him like surfing his like 12-6 race board over in Hawaii. And he pretty much was getting barreled at these 12-6 boards. It was seriously skilled waterman, Noah. And I guess are the Janellas just family friends, or how did you get, involved in, you know, with the Janellas?
Basically just family friends. My dad grew up racing with him, doing all the prone races on the North Shore with Uncle Sean. And so, yeah, they were good friends. And so that was just, basically family friends. And Kai Lenny's movies. I fully forget the name now, but it dropped, and that's kind of when the whole passion started. there's like, wow, it's like that stuff can actually be done on a stand-up. We're so used to just seeing like at old man's the, you know, the guys on the giant blue planet boards, like going straight, can barely turn the things. Yeah. And then that dropped and they're doing airs and, you know, getting barreled. It's like, oh, that's actually pretty crazy. And so that sparked a little passion. And yeah, we reached out to them and that's basically how it started.
Yeah, that was kind of pretty similar timing to when I got into it too. I think it was called the Sat Movie? I think it was pretty basic.
Called the Sat Movie. I think it's literally just called the Sat Movie, yeah.
Yeah. And it was awesome. I just started getting into the SUP sort of surfing as well. And I actually wasn't that into the SUP racing originally, but the downwind really, really intrigued me. And sounds like it did you as well, coming from the outrigger paddling as well. So talk to us about Molokai and 2015 was the, or 2016, I think, was the first year I did. I tried to get in 2015 and I just wasn't quite ready. I'd done Maui to Molokai and I was trying to get a mate of mine, Brad Gall, to help me get into M2O and it just didn't light up. But 2016 was a really flat year with really big surf. And talk to us about that race.
Yeah, so that race, I think, was the second year I was doing stand-up. I was racing with Jeffrey Spencer, I believe.
Yeah.
And this kid, Alex, from France. We were doing a three-man relay that year. I think I was still like 14 at the time.
I remember. I knew Jeffrey back in the day, and I knew Alex. And so I would have seen you training out with those boys, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were racing together pretty young, and we wake up race day, and it's probably one of the flattest I've ever seen the channel. Like, we'll see the channel pretty small, and even on light wind days, there's still some movement out there, but it was like sheet glass the whole entire day. I remember getting up behind this giant, like 30-foot escort boat, and it had this big inboard in it, so it was putting out some pretty bad exhaust. But I was sitting in his wake for probably a half an hour, just surfing his wake, just trying to create some sort of movement. Cause it was pretty brutal. But yeah, I think that was your first year. And yeah, that was classic.
Yeah, it was a heavy year. It was I was on a SIC, basically a board that was designed for like mega downwind, and it was pushing a lot of water the whole way across the channel. The best bumps from memory were from China Wall, where we had to go around that marker, and there was this crazy backwash that was like, it was the best bumps, like surfing little ratters around this marker and then turn the marker. And whose guy was it when you had to paddle in through the waves?
Oh boy, I think Jeffrey might have been through the waves.
Yeah. Because it was still some seriously solid set. I'll see if I can find an old photo of Travis Grant, who won that year, going through. But I had to pull back on a pretty big bomb.
There was China. I think China was pretty solid that day.
Oh, it was, yeah. On the foil, you'd have been stoked with a swell like that, but across the channel, it would have been pretty tricky. You know, for the first time, I think, in the history of Molokai, the best bumps from China Wall into the finish. Rather than across the channel.
Yeah, right. I know. It was pretty crazy that year, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, let's get into the... So then you were on the slingshot stuff, and now I guess it's in like 2016 or 20... Yeah, 2016 is when Kai first did that Olokai video, that video after Olokai, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, and so you were at the slingshots when the Go foils would just start to, I guess, make their push, and that original, the original Kai foil, and Kai broke the internet doing that downwind. on the Chopdown race board.
Yeah. We were actually trying to do downwinders before that came out, and it was like it was pretty impossible. We had a little 17-foot whaler, and so we'd tow up out in the bay and try, and it was just like you could get going for a sec, but there was no way you were keeping it going. And then that came out, and it was just like, all right. That's when Kai was like breaking the internet with everything, you know? And
yeah,
it was just like, of course Kai can pull it off. You know, it was just so nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so crazy. I remember after seeing that thinking, okay, I need to do this. I was in Maui at the time, and I saw Kai paddling out on a foreboard. We stopped at the top of Malika and just watched him and to see if it was, you know, if it was real, you know, to see if it was like, you know, video tricks, like Hollywood tricks, or if it was actual legit. And sure enough, he paddled up and started going downwind, and I'm like, no way.
Wow, yeah. That's impressive. Yeah. I had no idea about that. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And so, he was on top at the time. He was sub-foiling. He was sub-foiling at the time.
He was, but like I wasn't. None of us, like Noel was sub-foiling back home in Australia. And anyway, that spurred me on to get a foil, and you know, I guess the rest is history. But you know, it was, I think that video really launched foiling into that next level, because it was, as you say, like it was happening before that, but it wasn't at a level that it was popular enough for most people to even know about it, you know. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, really, even this year compared to last, it's a whole nother game. So yeah, it's crazy the progression we're seeing. So I can't even imagine, yeah, what people were thinking of it back then.
Pretty yeah, exactly. You know, like people were talking, I guess maybe because I was so downwind brained back then for the SUP, it was like, wow, like that was like so cool. And yeah, it was pretty cool. And then basically because you couldn't keep up with the fall progression, you kind of, you know, sort of waited it out until this year.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I just got back in December. We were, I was actually staying with Annie one year over on Molokai. I think it was 2018. Was that the first year of the foil? 2018?
Yeah. I think it was.
So we were staying together and we on Molokai, and we're supposed to do SUP. I think she was going to race solo, and then I was racing with Alex again, and last minute, like Kai or someone had a Nash sup, a Nash foil for her. And she like morning of like switched her decision and foiled it. And we were all mind blown. We're just like, yeah.
I remember Kai started pestering Annie. Yeah.
It was nuts.
Yeah. Insane.
And so I was like, okay, it's possible. You know, it's like you're foiling Molokai. This is legit. And so, yeah, we just got back in December, and that has been.
So after what COVID off, basically you've decided COVID until you know, last year, you're like, okay, December, let's start doing it. And you entered for Molokai, and I've seen you've been putting in some pretty good training runs. So tell us about had you downwind foiled before this December?
I had never downwind foiled before December. No, I really did my first downwind. It was a Waikiki run, backwards wind. I was just like surf foiling at Old Maz out in front of Outrigger, and Simeon was out and was like, let's go to Waikiki. And I was like, all right, screw it. You know, let's do it. And
yeah,
I think I fell. My first time ever downwinding on a foil, and I fell like a mile out because the bay like really pulls hard there. I fell so far outside and had just the longest paddle all the way in, and then went back.
I think a lot of people will be glad to hear that you didn't just ace it your first time.
yeah, Yeah. Yeah. I went back for another one and got it. And it was just like, you know, you're just so stoked. You're the craziest feeling because you just covered like, you know, like 2 or 3 miles in a matter of minutes. And just, I don't know, coming from a downwind background, I've been downwind racing pretty much my whole entire life. That concept is so foreign to us, like moving that fast and being able to pick up like those ground swells that, you know, it's like we're paddling. It's like you always dream of like picking up that giant, you know, 40-foot spread out monster ground swell that rolls through. But the canoes, even the kayaks, were just never even close to being fast enough to pick that stuff up. So on the foil, you can pretty much pick everything up unless it's like really massive. I think we did a North Shore run one day and there was some bombs that were coming through that we couldn't even touch. But yeah, I mean, other than that, you can pretty much pick up everything. And so it's the like pretty much epitome of downwind. It like, it covers all aspects of it. And so, yeah, that first Waikiki run, I was like, this is it. This is like, this is what I meant to do.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. Hey, were you prone foiling or were you on the SUP on that first run? Sounds like
prone foiling. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And then talk to us about your transition to the SUP foil and I guess why you did it. And yeah.
Yeah. So we were doing it and we were all stuffed. We were like so jazzed, like coming back in the back of the truck. We'd hitchhike back from Waikiki and there was a couple guys doing it. We'd be in the back of the truck just like amped and they'd be like, oh, you guys have no idea. Just like wait until you get into stand up. And we're like, yeah, I don't know. And heard it enough. And I was reached out to Jack. I was like, all right, I'm ready. Let's do it. And he had an extra board for me. He threw me on my first time on a sub. I was on it was one of F1's 7.6 by 93 liters, 16-wide.
Yeah.
And I was like, is this thing big enough? And he kind of looked at me and was like, yeah, you'll be fine. You have a sub background. You'll be good. And so I was like, all right. And basically just threw me out into Hoi Kai, into the bay. And just, I had to figure it out. And took me like, man, the first day probably took me like 15 minutes to get up in the beginning. And then I fell like 3 or 4 times. And by the end of the run, I had it. And I was like, I was so stoked because everybody's like, they're pissed. You know, they're like, dude, it took me like, you know, weeks to figure this out. I were doing like 4-hour runs. And it's like, I don't know. It, you know, it just kind of clicked. But the sup background definitely helped. And just throw the two together. I guess it's not too different. But yeah, I guess Jack just kind of threw me out there. And I just figured it out. Just went for it.
That's epic. 15 minutes. That's not even fair, mate. But I guess it's probably worth talking now about your background in like SUP surfing, and you competed in a world tour event at Turtle Bay back in the day. And so you were using very low volume boards. So
how
that helped.
Oh yeah, I mean we would, you know, the SUP boards we were using, we'd be standing on them up to our waist. Kind of stand like I don't really understand how we did it now, but yeah, and we'd pretty much paddle them up out of the water from being waist deep, and get going. I guess it was a little different because you didn't have like a bowling ball under you that was trying to roll around. So they're definitely more stable, but still just the concept of being able to like stand on like a, I don't know, we were using like 6.2 or 6.4 by like 45, 50 liters. So they're pretty tiny. And so just the concept of that balance and the small boards was, you know, carried over for sure. And so it's not like I was brand new to it.
Yeah. The liters you just described are some people's short boards. Yeah. 6.2 at like 40, 45 liters. Like it was, you know, I didn't know you back then, but I definitely would have seen the crew you were hanging out with, like I knew Jeffrey and Annie, and they were using boards that literally some people would use as shortboards, and they're standing on them, paddling onto waves. And I guess obviously being lighter helps, but it doesn't really take away from, you're still learning that balance. And I always ask people when I'm teaching, like, have you stand up paddled before? And I always ask it with, like, knowing that they're going to say yes, but on like a 10 foot by 34 wide board, and it doesn't actually help at all. But like, I asked you this morning, have you said you stand up paddle before? And you're like, oh yeah. You know, done a few molokais and, you know, did the turtle babe, and oh, okay. This is SUP experience that is going to translate over to foiling. Whereas SUP foiling, you know, whereas paddling a 10 foot by 32 on the lake once or twice with your family doesn't translate.
No, it's not going to do anything, unfortunately. I wish it did, but yeah, that's not quite going to help.
I want to talk to you about, like, your outrigger canoe background as well, because, you know, you mentioned, you know, doing a lot downwinding since you were, as long as you can remember, kind of thing, and how chasing the bumps downwind on an outrigger is, like, you can never tap into those open ocean swells, and then how the transition to SUP boiling, you were on those swells that you just couldn't catch on an outrigger. I felt the exact same thing, but I was coming from a unlimited stand-up paddle background, which is even slower than an outrigger, it's kind of I kind of see it as swimming is the slowest, then prone paddling, then start paddling, then outriggers, and then surf skis, and now we've added foiling. And to me, the jump from downwind start paddling to downwind foiling was, like, kind of mind-blowing, like you said, but even more so. It took me a little while to, like, you know, at least a week or two of, like, worth of downwind runs. So, you know, like, for some people that's almost a year, and other people it's, you know, literally a week or two because you get it every day. But to adjust my positioning, because I was used to paddling a 14 foot or 18 foot board on a stand up foil board. Back then I was on a my first board was a 7.2, and then I sort of transitioned down to like a 6.6. But just looking forwards and only seeing a really short nose, I kept thinking I had to put my nose up the back of the bump in front, like you do when you downwind paddle, versus now we know that you kind of want your nose sort of pointed down into the trough. So did you find that transition was tricky?
A little bit. We do a lot of fishing, and we have a boat here. And so, and all escort molokais and stuff too. So driving the boat was actually the craziest thing. Probably one of the most helpful things, being able to drive a boat to sea because it's so much faster, was a huge help. But yeah, I mean, I think the progression from, like, you know, either OC1 or prone or stand up, where you're trying to stick your nose, trying to stuff it into the bump, to foiling, where you're so much faster than a lot of these wind swells that you're actually trying to connect to troughs and kind of almost go around, like, the hump. It was a little tricky, and it definitely took me probably, I don't know, a couple weeks to get that down. But man, just the help that downwind racing in general had was just completely instrumental. And just knowing how, like, everything back, like all the bumps suck out and restack, and, you know, all of that stuff, and what's going to connect and what's not, and, you know, what to push for, what you can go up and over on, is all super critical. Because I mean, on foil, if you stick your nose into the back of a bump, you can suck the energy out of your foil pretty fast, and it's almost impossible to recover unless you're really good at paddling out of it. And so that's what I've really been working on, is like paddling up and over bumps. But man, it's almost impossible to pump up and over. And so, yeah, you got to be really, really careful, and you can't lose focus for even a second on downwind foiling, because you're moving so fast and the water underneath you is changing so quickly. Yeah. So it's critical definitely not to stuff yourself on foil.
The thing I found was that on the foil, because we're only riding the foil, if you're sitting like the nose of your board on the nose in front, like I said, you're on the uphill, whereas with the longer boards and the outrigger canoes and the surf skis, like if your nose is on the bump in front, your tail's actually on the top of the bump. So
yeah,
we want our foil to be on the top of the bump, and our nose is kind of just, you know, depending on the length of your board. Boards are getting pretty long now, but yeah, it was just a bit of a change. And I've seen a few people, two friends who've learnt coming from an ocean paddling background, and they found the same thing that. Obviously, there's the height above the bump, but then also the positioning on the bump is different because we're just riding much smaller equipment.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely is a change, and you know, just got to figure that one out. It's a little tricky for sure. I mean, and even with my extensive downwind background, like Andrew and Etta are still like blowing doors. It is impressive how fast they're moving and how well they're able to read. And so, yeah, I mean, it's like you feel like you can't go faster, but Andrew's like, you can always go faster, you know? And so it's just a matter of knowing how to read better on the foil specifically, and yeah, getting to that next level. So
for sure. Do you find that sort of nose up the back of the bump? I feel like I use that same sort of downwind SUP or, you know, outrigger, you know, ocean paddling sort of background paddle, like, I guess, version of downwinding to get up onto foil. Like, you see a lot of people now, when they're paddling up, they'll turn around and look for the bump behind. But from ocean paddling, you know, you just don't do that. Like, you're always looking forwards. And so for the paddle up, I'm looking for that. Like, I'm looking to stuff my nose into the bump in front to paddle up onto foil. Do you find the same?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You got it. You just, you know, get up on foil, start paddling, get a couple strokes and get stabilized, and wait for your nose to start pointing down, for your tail to start sucking up, and get that board moving a little bit, and you'll pop right up.
Yeah.
But yeah, it almost seems like they suck backwards is how you kind of have to look at it. And so you almost look for the bump in front of you. It's like, okay, one past me. So if there's a good bump in front of you, then there's going to be a good trough behind you. And it's that trough that you're looking for to stuff your nose into.
Good explanation of it. I like it. Tell us about, like, obviously the paddling came pretty natural to you, but I guess you sound like you'd done a bunch of prone foiling before you did the downwinds, or a little bit anyway.
A little bit.
How was your, like, learning to foil journey? Because I feel like because of your downwind experience, it was like the paddling part you had down, but to me, downwind foiling is two parts. It's one, the paddle up, and two, the foiling. How was your foiling for the first couple runs, I guess, or the learning to foil process, I guess?
Yeah, the learning to foil came easy this year. I already knew how to foil from, you know, back like 4 or 5 years ago. So my buddy had this old Takuma, and he was like, let's just go. And so that kind of re-sparked it. And so got up on that and was pumping around, and then went and picked up one of your guys' foils, the 850 from Jeff. And it was just like mind blowing how many leagues ahead that 850 was. And so I guess my original learning process was in Michigan on a lake behind a boat on one of Slingshot's foils. And my cousin from Costa Rica had brought it up. And yeah, it went pretty good. I don't know. It definitely took me quite a few tries to understand it. And I think his explanation, it was like you're trying to stand on like a greasy bowling ball, where it's like, it just, back then the foils were, they just wanted to roll underneath you so badly. If you got off center for even a second, they would just like flip. And so, yeah, man, it was pretty tricky, but kind of got that down up there and ordered one back when I got home, and just basically took it out to the surf. And I don't remember it being too tricky, but it was definitely a learning curve, like trying to catch a wave and learn in the surf, where you have so much, those foils were so lifty back then, and they had so much like early pop that keeping it down was the hardest part, and like controlling that initial speed gain was pretty tough.
Yeah. And what were you doing in Michigan? Do you have, are you, is that where your family's from? Or
I just got some time back there. Yeah.
Gotcha.
We just go up there for the summers. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. I think that's like a location that's got huge potential for downwind foiling. I think, you know, it's got
it's crazy. When it's windy up there and kind of stormy, it is just like bombing. It absolutely bombs. And I've surfed up there before, and I've surfed it like overhead in Lake Michigan, which was pretty cool experience. But this was before I was down on foiling, and you just look out and it's just like perfect groomed rollers. There's no backwash, there's no ocean swell. So it's, you know, it's literally just lake, and man, you can start and you could do a crazy long 100+ mile downwinder up there, no problem. And it would probably be one of like hood reminiscence, you know.
Yeah.
Just like perfect.
Yeah, that's definitely on my hit list. I wanna downwind that lake. It's massive. And like you said, you can do a, you can get some serious K's in. Like it's a huge lake. It's massive.
Massive.
Some serious potential. So yeah, when you said Michigan, I'm like, so I looked into that a little bit. Yeah.
Cool. You gotta get it on a storm when it's really windy. It's gotta be blowing like probably upwards of 35 up there for it to really start get going. Otherwise it's like pretty miniature. But when it goes, it goes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So why don't we talk about, I guess, you know, you started, you know, you basically learned to downwind foil, what, like 6 months ago, and you do a Molokai to Oahu, and you've put some serious training runs in, done a bunch of races with the Oahu foil underground, and, you know, when did you decide you were doing Molokai?
I think right after my first SUP run.
You're ready. That's so good.
I was like, kind of looked at my dad. I think I'm going to do Molokai. I think I got this. You know, I got like 7 months, and I think I could pull it off. I already had the downwind like feel, and it was just a matter of getting the leg strength. Because, I mean, starting, you know, it's like I would do that little 7-miler in 25, 30 minutes, and my legs would be like bent, and doing like 2 or 3 runs was crazy. We're like, oh my God. So I did 3 today, do 3 Hawaii Kai runs. And it's just like, that was so long. But I was like, you know, if we're going to do a Molokai, it seemed pretty daunting doing, especially with the course change. Now finishing at Kaimana, it's like 42 miles, depending on your course.
Yeah.
That's pretty substantial. So knew I had to get some training in. And so for the first 2 months, 3 months, it was just like hammering Hawaii Kai runs every day. They pushed me out into a pretty big ADs run. Like, yeah. I think it was like my 8th time on the downwind. They're like, let's go ADs, and it was bombing. It was like, looking back, it was really unsafe. It was not smart, but I don't know. I just didn't know better at the time. I just hadn't been foiling for long enough. I had no leash, no phone. It was really windy. It was probably blowing 27 to 30, and there was some south swell, and the backwash was pumping. It was really tricky, and I got up right at Sandy's and made it to about Helena and went down, and I think I didn't get up for more than like a minute all the way until China Walls. I probably went down like 10 times. And yeah, it's just like such a shocker. But I kind of needed it for sure. You know, I was like, okay.
That's an ugly bit of water there. Like a lot of backwash. And especially when south swell and that amount of wind.
It can be a really difficult run. Yeah. Really, really difficult run. You hit the bay and it's like relaxing. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
You can just like chill for a sec because there you're just on your toes. And I was still on the 850 at the time. And so it was a lot of foil and trying to hold that thing down. In the backwash, man, I was just getting pitched out there. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I guess. And then, so yeah, I've been really stretching out lately. No Molokai is coming up. I think we got 7 weeks left until Molokai. And so it's like, gotta start putting in the miles. Can't really train for a distance race, only doing six, 7 mile runs. And so I looked at the weather and everything looked good. The tide is super important here on a rising or high tide. It's like dead flat. And so you really need to be on a low and dropping tide here. And it's like not even the same water. It's completely different. And so we had like straight east winds, which are super rare, out of like at like 25 to 30 and a dropping tide. And so I looked at Ryan and John. I was like, let's go to Ebba, you know, let's do it. I know Pat Jenkins had done it once. And he had a pretty inside line and it looked pretty tough. And so we planned it. And I think that was pretty much, other than Pat, we were kind of the first guys to do that, all the way to White Plains. And so that was about 28 miles. And we kind of, Ryan and I looked at each other and we're like, well, that wasn't bad. Like, let's go do another. And so we ended up just doing a Hawaii Kai run, but put another 7 miles in. And so that was, I think, my first taste of like some proper distance, anything over 20. And ever since, so Jack and I just went on a pretty good adventure
over
Jack calls me 2 days before and was like, hey, the wind looks really good and let's strike mission. Let's do an unassisted Maui to Molokai. I got the logistics figured out. Just pack your foils. And so I was like, all right, let's do it. Why not? And so showed up to the airport with my foils in my hand in a little bit of bubble wrap. And my board shorts, my rash guard, a VHF radio, my water pack, and some slippers. And got on the plane. Our friend Cash picked us up in Maui, drove us down to Honolulu, jumped off the rocks at Subs and went. And so that was alone. I'd never done that run before, so that was kind of an unknown. And so we put in 28 miles that day, did the Maui to Molokai line, ended up at Kona Kakai, and John Amundsen picked us up there. Went and ate lunch, drove us back up to the wharf and dropped us there. We did a Kamalo run that afternoon, and we were supposed to fly home that night. And so we were sitting there. It was like, we were supposed to be leaving for the airport, really. Our flight was at 9. It was like 6:30. We were like just cruising. And Jack kind of looks up at me. He goes, you know what would be legendary? And I was like, oh, God. I already knew what he was talking about. And he's like, let's just fly home. Let's cancel our flight and let's just boil home. And so I was like, okay, well, if we can cancel the flight, you know, just let's call and see if we can even cancel our flight first. Cause we're supposed to Kamaka air freight our boards back. Cause Mokulele won't take boards over 6 feet. And so we're just going to throw them on, just bare, no bag, just straight in. Have to pay for that. I have to pay for the flight. And so Jack calls Mokulele and was like, hey, I was just wondering if, you know, we know our flight's in a couple hours, but if we could get a voucher for a flight in the future. The lady goes, okay, yeah, what's your name? Let me check. And a couple seconds later, she comes back. She's like, all right, Mr. Ho, your flight's been canceled and your voucher's been sent to your email. We kind of looked at each other like, okay, I guess we're doing it now. Guess we got no option now. So kind of had to get into that mindset real quick that night. Kind of was laughing for a little bit. Like, you know, just no thinking, didn't plan it, no safety. It probably really wasn't the best idea, but we got really lucky and it was a really good day for it. So went to the store, got some pasta, carbo loaded real quick, and woke up that morning. John drove us down to Kalaupapa and we went. Luckily, we could see Molokai from the beach, from the hotel. I mean, we could see a walk from the hotel. So we were able to find our line. If we weren't, it probably would have been a little tricky, a little bit scary, but the wind was perfect, straight east, and it was the most fun channel I've ever done in my life. Paddled up, the wind line was right there outside of the bay, and it was just like perfect rollers all the way. There was like no quarter. Barely any quarter. It's just like pretty much straight down the wind. And yeah, it was pretty insane. And then that morning, Saturday morning, John, the underground guys were having a little get together, little practice race, starting at China Wall. So we're like, all right, race starts at 12. If we leave, figure like 2.5 hours, we weren't racing. So we're kind of just cruising, having fun and filming. And we're like, if we leave the beach at like 9:30, we'll probably time it perfectly for the start of the race at China Walls. Yeah. And so launched and I passed China Walls at 12:06. And there was still guys trying to get up outside of China Walls and just entered straight the race, came straight into it. It was so fun. You know, just seeing everybody and they're like, where did you guys come from? And you know, it's like, Molokai. It's pretty classic. Yeah. And it was a great run. The bay section was pretty fun. Definitely a lot smaller, definitely a grind, but that was super fun. And then came around and finished and John actually entered us in the race, put our names down. It's pretty classic. And then spun around.
You gave everyone a bit of a head start.
Yeah. Gave everybody a 6-minute head start. And that was pretty classic. So I think we finished that with, I think it was like 42 miles. Took us just, I think, 2 hours and 45 minutes from where we started. So just under 3 hours was our time. And I think that I spun around and did the second race at 3:00. And I think that for the weekend topped us out at just over 100 miles on the weekend. So it was, I was gassed. I was done. That second race killed me, but you know, it was just like such a good training weekend for what's coming up, here in July with Maui to Molokai being only 2 days before M2O. It really gives you a sense how prepared you got to be for that. You know, we were just like cruising for the M2M and M2O. We weren't pushing, but you know, if you're racing it, it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be super hard. And so I think it's really going to separate the men from the boys, and it's really going to show who's trained up and prepared for these longer distance runs at a high cadence. Because it's one thing to just go do it, but to race it and to have the nutrition and everything dialed for that. It's going to be really hard. It's going to be a good challenge. So super excited for that. Yeah, that was kind of the recap from last weekend.
Yeah, that's crazy. Very cool. And look, I think if you were to go back 10 years and think about like doing something like that on an outrigger or a stand up, it's seems almost, you know, impossible, or at least not fun. Whereas on the foil, look, it's, as you said, it's 2 hours, 45 minutes cruising, you know,
yeah,
from Molokai to Kaimana. Like that's ridiculous. And so like whilst I think it's, as you said, it's going to be a big test of endurance, it's as long as you're going those sorts of speeds, it's not as bad as it would be if it was on a stand up or an outrigger. I guess is the point I'm making.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it makes it doable, right? This is stuff that we could really only dream of as downwind racers back when we were doing stand up. It's like, oh man, you know, it'd be so cool to like do two channels in a weekend or do 100 miles, but it just wasn't a reality. I mean, I guess the swimmers are able to do like 24, 26 hours of swimming straight, but it's at such a low cadence. Like the paddling is so physically demanding. That like doing a Maui to a Oahu deal just wasn't really in the picture physically for us. And so, yeah, the foiling has really opened up so many opportunities all around the world for some pretty crazy downwind stuff. I know the guys in the Med are really starting to step up, and there's some cool runs down there. And I have my sights here on a Maui to Oahu run around the backside of Molokai Strait. It's just about 100 miles nonstop. Yeah. And I know Simeon and a bunch of guys are really pushing to go to Kauai later this summer. So yeah, I'm really starting to stretch out new stuff. We never really was thought to be possible. And so it's super exciting. And yeah, it's just, it's such a huge step in the world of downwind, and just couldn't be more stoked.
Now I'm stoked to hear the Hawaii boys are stepping up, you know, because, you know, obviously limited to one island is, you know, like you guys sort of found 30 miles is kind of like the max you can do on Oahu.
Yep.
With like, I guess, winds be back with decent conditions. But, there's, you know, I guess I'm not sure what 200 Ks is, but in miles, but it's very doable. You know, like Olivia showed us, you know, what she got 200 and what she did, like 15 hours or something on foil, 230, I think it was 240 Ks. Like it's right there. Like it's fully doable. And like Maui to Oahu, I reckon it'd be an epic course. I think it'd be fun, you know, like I think it'd be really cool to see. And obviously, you know, being out in the middle of the ocean has its challenges, but it also has its benefits. So I'm excited to watch it all go down this summer and be a part of it for the racing, you know, come July. That stood out to me. You go.
Just touching on that in the middle of the ocean thing, the safety is really what we start to push, and the escort boats and, you know, all of that stuff. Because Maui to Molokai, I mean, I don't know if we're at the point yet to do it unassisted. We did this last one unassisted across Molokai. It was just Jack and I out there. We had no escort for either legs, the Maui to Molokai or the Molokai to Oahu. But we just had a VHF radio and we did have cell service the whole time. But, you know, it's like if something does go wrong and it's like we're riding like giant machetes, these things are inherently dangerous. It can go into a pretty tricky situation, pretty bad. So I know you guys have a lot of coast over in Australia and like you're talking Michigan, you can do coastal runs for really long and you can have a way safer environment and be close to the shore the whole time and not need an escort. But for these 100-mile open ocean runs, the channel to Kauai, it's like logistically with escorts and just getting the boats back and forth, that channel can be insane. It's like 12 hours by boat on the upwind. And so that is really what our hurdle is trying to figure out the safety aspect. And then, you know, it's like almost like you need a helicopter or a plane or something to do it over here in Hawaii, just because it is so dangerous. And the ocean safety guys and the lifeguards and Coast Guard work so hard to, you know, keep everybody safe. And so we want to respect those guys too over here and make sure we're not being, you know, just turning a blind eye to safety and just, you know, because we can. And so just got to be careful of that. But man, if we can figure out the logistics of the safety and get a couple good escort boats, and it can really, really take off.
Oh, for sure. And like, you know, there's a whole, you know, from Molokai to Oahu, there's all these guys that have boats that can escort. You know, it's, you know, there's a lot more in the paddling community. There's more access to boats, I would have assumed, over in Hawaii, than like here in the paddling community. Like, of the, you know, 40, 50 guys that I downwind with, there's probably 3 or 4 of them that have boats, and maybe another, you know, 5 or 6 that have jet skis, you know. So it's less of a, like, no one's taking their boat out every weekend to go fishing, I guess. It's the point.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, on an island like Hawaii, like, it's pretty, you know, beautiful and ideal. Like, mornings go fishing, and when the wind comes up, you know, downwind. And like, I always see Kahi's story, you know, he's going out on his boat just to sort of muck around. That doesn't really happen that much here in Australia. Like, that's it's a pretty cool. There's those boats around here for sure. Like, you know, a VHF radio and a mobile phone for crossing, you know, somewhere like, you know, the Channel of Bones is pretty, it's pretty gung-ho, you know, it's borderline irresponsible, you know, and having, like, even like an EPIRB, or, you know, there's some pretty good safety equipment out there now. And I guess, yeah, the conditions are good, so you guys backed yourselves. But yeah, like you said, it's not something that, like, we don't want to see everyone do that every weekend. That's not something that is going to be good for the sport.
Yeah, and exactly. And we had that conversation over there that evening. It's like, all right, this is, you know, it's not the safest idea. And like you said, it's borderline irresponsible. What we did, we both have a lot of experience in the channel. I think that was my like 9th time crossing the channel. And I've escorted it countless times. So we were both comfortable in the water, really good watermen. But yeah, I mean, it's like you really want to make sure that if you're going to do it, you have safety nets. Like, we did have a couple of safety nets. Jack's buddy was ready with the ski if we needed. You know, and so there were some underlying safety nets there for sure. But yeah, I mean, you just got to be really careful and respect all the water safety guys and make sure that we're not creating a super dangerous environment for, you know, for everybody. But it is doable. What we did, I mean, you know, it's like just under 3 hours. And if you really push, you could probably do it in 2.5, 2:15. Maybe, I mean, I don't know. You guys maybe might even be able to do it under 2, possibly if you really get going. But, it's not that long, like, compared to some of these races. I mean, Molokai, we're used to doing 4+ hours on the sup. And yeah, so
I remember that the first year it was 5.5 for me. And I remember the second year I did it, the winner of the prone in the women's, she did 8 hours. Like, it's a different race at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. So looking at the concept of doing it in sub 2.5 hours, it's like, it's not that big of a deal. But that channel, you just got to make sure the conditions are right and plan it. And we got super lucky with conditions. But in the future, I would absolutely, you know, want to look for a weather window and make sure that it's going to be proper, because that channel is so dangerous. And I was just escorting it a couple weeks ago for the OC1 solo for the Paw race.
Oh, yeah.
And a 25-foot escort boat went down. It sunk in like 2 minutes that weekend. It was as big as I've ever seen that channel. It was, it was like genuinely scary. I was in a 25 whaler escorting, and we took a pretty good wave over the back and didn't quite fill the boat, but, you know, got a knee high, filled the boat with knee high water in the back, and kind of had to pin it. Cause we took a breaker over. It's like those kind of weekends where it's hard to stay with each other and it's too big. You really need to have some safety for that one. And like that weekend, it was, I don't know, it was crazy. Guys, there were probably four or five paddlers that never got found during the race. And a handful more that got found 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours in. Because it got so big out there, and it was just like, you could be 100 yards, 200 yards from your paddler, from escort boats, and you couldn't see them just because the swells were like, you know, 20, 30, 40 feet deep. And these giant boats with these, even the outriggers and the flags would completely disappear into these troughs. And it made it really, really tricky and really dangerous. So it can happen, but if you plan it, it's 100% doable.
Yeah, forecasting, like, you know, the meteorologists do a pretty good job nowadays. As much as they like to give them a hard time when they get it wrong, it is a plan. It's like you can estimate, or, you know, you can plan the risk, I guess. And on a day like the outriggers did it, probably not a good day to go unassisted. But the day that you guys did it, you know, it looks from the little snippets, like a good day for it. Like, it was a safe day for it. It wasn't reckless.
No, it wasn't. It was, and we stayed together the whole time. We had eyes on each other for the whole entire race. I mean, the whole entire crossing. And it was great. It was probably like the most fun downwinder I've ever done. It was just like perfect big rollers, and oh god, it was insane.
So I want to ask a question. For that, the outrigger race. What first question? Was the winner, did he get the record for the outrigger, or did he not?
Pat Dolan won it. I don't know if he set the record or not, to tell you the truth. I know the kid Wyatt, but Egbert, that kid, he was 15 or 16, and I think he came in 6th or 7th. I think he set the new junior record, and that was pretty mind blowing. But it was a great year. It was an insane channel.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if, because what I find personally is, you know, there's a sweet spot, you know, for like going fast, and when it's too wild, too windy, it's harder to navigate, and you're more prone to make errors. And whether it's an error and you fall off, or just an error in your line, and you're not optimizing, I guess the glide and flow of your foil. I guess it's bigger wind and bigger swell isn't always the fastest, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you want that. I mean, for us on foils, you want that medium wind day out there, because even on a medium wind day, it's still huge. Compared to the runs that coastal runs that we're doing, these open ocean swells that we're able to get into don't need 25 knots or 30 knots of east wind to get going. I mean, they're going on 10 to 15 knots easy. When it's giant, it's going to be really tricky. You're going to need to be on a smaller foil, or else you're just going to be uncomfortable the whole time, just kind of trying to hang on. And so that in itself creates its own problems with dead spots and, you know, efficiency and exactly what you're talking about. So yeah, it's the medium days that we're actually looking at that are going to be really fun and lined up, and we'll be able to push a lot harder on those days.
Yeah.
Fuck them. And it won't be so wild and crazy. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. The other thing, whilst escorting, do you think you would have been more comfortable on a foil or paddling in the water or being on the boat?
Oh man, it would have been pretty nuts on a foil. It was huge. I was probably more comfortable on the boat. Yeah,
it was pretty. Yeah, I just know that like on some days when it's that wild on the boat, like I guess to me foils are so efficient, and obviously I wasn't there that day. And I wasn't out there, but it's like a lot of the time when it's really rough and you go out sort of, you know, with it all, it's sometimes it's like that big a piece of equipment in a wild ocean like that is too much. And a foil or an outrigger or a stand up like designed for downwind sort of racing is almost more comfortable because you're, I don't know, maybe it's because I don't drive boats very often, but it's, yeah, I really feel at home personally in the wild conditions on my like downwind equipment, whereas it can be too much in a boat sometimes. Sure.
Yeah. I was in a 25 whaler. So it was like the best boat to be doing that on. It was super comfortable, but yeah, man, some of the other fishing boats are like a cat that lists really bad. Probably would have been pretty scary. I mean, I was still relatively like on edge whole downwind section on the boat for sure. I mean, after we took that wave over the back, it was like, okay, this is real out here. This is like super varsity. For you, I don't know if you've seen it, and to I guess anybody who's gonna watch this, go look up some of that footage from it. It's like these 20-foot, 25-foot OC1s look like little toothpicks on these waves, and these the water is like 20 feet long, and that's just like the crest of it. I mean, these swells were genuinely massive.
Yeah.
So
what can we be searching to say that?
You can probably just look up PAA, P-E-A-A. PAA Hawaii. And they might have some good videos of it. Just to kind of give you a sense.
Yeah, I just saw bits and pieces on Instagram, but I haven't, I'd love to have a good look at it. I'm sure everyone else would too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure how much footage they have. But I'm sure you can go on Instagram and just search up like PAA or her 2024, yeah, OC1 solo, and you'll find some footage, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Nice one. Let's get a little bit into gear just to, I guess, finish off. And so what equipment are you looking at using for the racing coming up in July?
As far as foils. Yeah, as far as foils go, I'll either be on the 770 or the 680, most likely the 770 unless it's bombing, and then I'll be on the 680. If it's like 20 plus, I'll probably go 680. But other than that, the 770 has just been so efficient, and it does have enough top end. But in a racing situation, it's just going to save your legs a lot.
Yeah.
Over that 680 and not having to, you know, really work it in. If you do hit like a dead spot or end up stuffing yourself accidentally, which can happen pretty easily out there. The 770 really carry you. It felt great on our day when we did it. I was using 770 small fuse 135 and definitely could have gone to the 120 tail. And then easily could have gone to the 680, but the tricky part for Molokai is that the finish on the 680, if you go 680 small fuse 120, you're going to have a trick in the bay. And especially rounding Diamond Head through like Diamond Head to Kaimana, that finish. If there's no south swell or if it's light, it's going to be tough. It's going to be going to be a grind after 40 miles of racing. So, yeah, I mean, I still don't know what I'm going to use, and I won't know what I'm going to use till race day. It really depends on the condition. We do have a rising tide. So the channel will be really good on a rising tide all morning, but the bay is going to be, once you hit Portlock until the finish, is going to be a lot smaller. And it's going to be tight and slow. So line through there is going to be super critical, not to get too far inside. And yeah, you want to make sure that you got enough foil under your feet so you don't burn out through there and cramp, because that can definitely happen pretty easily.
Yeah. On the line choice, like, obviously it's a new course for everyone.
100%.
Do we know if it's a straight line from Molokai to Kaimana, or do we have to sort of cut in towards China Wall, Portlock sort of area?
I would assume that they're going to let us go out. I don't think that they're going to make, like, are they going to make like a checkpoint on the inside by China Wall?
Yeah.
I'm assuming that they're going to let us stay outside and come in by Diamond Head, and not have to straight line to Portlock. It'll, one, make the channel way easier. You won't have to corner so hard, and it'll also allow you to stay outside of that flat water in the bay. And stay in the ocean swell and in the deep stuff, and it'll carry you. You just got to make sure that you get in close enough, because as the island turns, that wind, even on the inside, can almost be a headwind. And so it can get a little tricky. And so where you come in from Black Point, whether it be Black Point or all the way to Diamond Head Buoy or, you know, whatnot, you just got to be careful to make sure that the wind is east enough so it's not going to be a headwind. When we have like a northeast wind, that section can be really tricky.
Oh, for sure. I know I've only done Hawaii a couple times, but when I have the first bit, feels like it's kind of cross off, and you're kind of quartering. Like, to me, the fastest bumps always feel like you're going out to sea versus sort of straight and into shore. And then when you hit Black Point, it changes pretty instantly to what feels like cross off, but the swells are wrapping. And you can ride those swells like basically into shore, and then cut out easily because it's sort of offshore. So it's a very different bit of water to, I guess, the channel. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that run is cool because you hit so many different pieces of water, and especially with Black Point, all the backwash you get there. So there's like one good section. There's a flat section in the middle of the bay around Kahala. For whatever reason, it usually stacks up there, and it's like the best section of the run. You hit backwash at Black Point, and then you get, like you were saying, it gets shallower inside by like Kaikos and Lighthouse and everything by Diamond Head. And you start to pick up that south swell that comes in. And so you start to get the grounders that push into shore. And then the wind swell kind of goes away. And so, there's so many different aspects to that run and so much different water. So it's super cool. But as far as line goes, I mean, probably rum to Diamond Head Buoy, and then just know to cut in before you hit that headwind.
Yeah. Yeah. Because originally when there were the rumors going around about this, like, because they were talking about finishing at Kahala at one point, and then changed it to Kaimana, which I'm a big fan of. I think it's going to be cool, you know, finishing at Waikiki rather than Kahala. If they're going to change it, if they're going to change it anyway. What's your view on the course change?
Yeah, no, I love it. I think starting in the Leo, I mean, let me back up. So with foils, it's like you've experienced it a couple times. Finishing the same foil, I mean, the same finish as M2O, where you have to pump all the way past China's and into the bay, was like ridiculous. You're almost choosing a foil based on the finish and not for the other 30 miles. And so the fact that we're going to start hopefully in the wind line and then finish, you know, on foil in the wind is huge. I think that's really important for the sport. And allows you to really pick a foil and equipment based on the bulk of the run and not the last 2 miles. So that's great. And so I love the Kaimana finish. I think it'll be tricky, but super doable. We do it all the time. We do it every day. And so that'll be fun. And with the surf and everything, hopefully we have some south swell. That'll make it interesting.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think originally when they announced it was going to be at Kahala, all of us collectively over here were pretty worried. Kahala is a super tight channel, and on either side is really shallow reef. And in a racing situation, they would have either had to have it marked off really well, or everybody was going to get smoked on the reef. So we were pretty worried about that. And plus, it was a really tight quarter, not quite upwind, but pretty bad. And that last mile or so would have been really difficult. No bumps. So yeah, and the channel is like a dog leg, I think, right? And so yeah, you would have had to like go straight and then hard right and then hard left. So it would have been
a bit technical for, you know, super majority of people with legs of jelly.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially if you don't know the channel, like I think we would even have a hard time with it, the guys that know it. But if you're not from here and don't know that channel at all, never seen it before, it just wasn't safe. That reef is really sharp and you can get pretty smoked on it. So I think the Simeon really pushed for that Kaimana finish, and him being a lifeguard and everything with water safety, I think that really had some pull, and it's great. So finish is awesome. Start is awesome. I think we're all super stoked on that. The line should be great.
Do you think the start needed to be changed?
I don't know. On a really light day, I mean, you guys had a pretty tricky last time where, you know, a good handful of people didn't even make it to the wind line and they had to go down. So did it need to be changed? No, but I think it does. It is in the benefit of the sport, and it allows everybody to really focus their energy on the whole race and not just getting to the wind line. And then it's like, you know, you got to recover pretty bent out of shape once you hit the wind line after a good bit of pump. Some guys will be on a bigger foil. You know, they'll have a much easier time flat water their board and just cruise out. So, yeah, I mean, I think it just changes the dynamic of it. And so, yeah, I do like the change. It didn't need to be, but I think it's good.
Yeah. Ah, cool. And I'm also going to ask. Yeah, I guess it takes a bit of the tactics out of it and makes it a little bit more similar to Maui to Molokai. Do you think that's a fair comment?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
It's a very different channel to Maui to Molokai, and it's still going to be like, it's extra distance. I think the time is probably going to be, as you said, probably pretty similar, you know, if not longer, despite the, you know, pretty much 15 minutes of upwind that the old course had. I'm actually really stoked that, probably a bit biased here coming from Australia and Hawaii being kind of expensive to travel to, but 2 weeks of racing, sorry, 1 week of racing, 3 races. It's pretty nice for the international guys, you know?
Oh yeah. And totally. And I actually really like that whole deal where Imua's on the 14th and then it's like 19th and 21st. It's like 1, 2, 3. And it's going to make it tougher because these races alone, I mean, with how good the foils are now, aren't that hard anymore, really. You know, I mean, it's like, we're just talking about this. It's like sub 2.5 hours is like, it's almost a sprint.
Yeah.
To what we're used to. And so, yeah, I think the fact that it's a full week of racing. The international guys can come for like 2 weeks tops, or even if they stay for just that week, it makes it way easier on them. So it's not like one's this month, the other's the next month. They're all spread out. It would make it a lot trickier. And so I think it helps the sport in the sense that more people can come just financially and are able to participate in everything. So yeah, I'm stoked that they're all on the same week. It's gonna be fun.
Me too. Do you think there's gonna be people that don't enter M2M because they want to save themselves for M2O?
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about this, right? It's like which one are you trying to win? And with the addition of the Triple Crown, it's like some guys are going to want to do well in all. Some guys are like just M2O focus. Some guys are just M2M focus. And so I guess it's personal, right? It's like, what one is the biggest to you? Which of the three, like, quote unquote championships or titles are you really pushing for? I think for the guys that do want to win M2O, maybe they'll just either skip M2M completely or just cruise it and just do it and not push. And with a full day of rest, you'll be good for M2O.
What are you thinking? What's the biggest goal for you? Like of the.
I don't know if I've decided that yet. I think I'm gonna try to place well in all. I think I'm gonna push pretty hard in all three. And if M2O maybe takes a little bit of a hit, if my legs are a little sore and not fresh for M2O, then so be it. I think sandbagging the other two races is, I don't know if I'm about that. We'll see though.
Personally, I hope the Triple Crown is now the ultimate title rather than M2M or M2O or Paddlemilla. That's how I'm going into it.
I think so. I'd love to see that, man. If that was like really the ultimate goal, and if you could win all three, that's like, you know, that's to someone who sandbagged two of them to win M2O kind of thing. And I mean, that's really where this, that'd be like the ultimate win for sure, you know? And yeah. So I'm definitely going to do my best in all three, 100%.
Do you think it's possible for one person to win all three?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Who's your, obviously you're backing yourself, but if it wasn't you, who do you think's the person to beat at the moment? From the Hawaii
group, I've been nails over here. They have been so fast. I think Edo is really fast in sprints. It's pretty insane what he's able to do in a sprint situation. I haven't seen him in a distance situation yet. He works a lot, and so he isn't able to train as much as Andrew has been. And so I think it's going to be an interesting year. I think those two are going to be up there and battling it out. Obviously, you and Oscar are really
fast. Those two were Edo and Andrew were hammering last year, and I know they're only getting better. So yeah, definitely, I agree with you there.
So that's great. Edo and I are on this guy Francesco's boards out of Maui. And they have been insane compared. I've ridden quite a few boards now, F1, Kalama, and these Franks are pretty psycho. Just the balance of them and the shape and just how the windage is feeling over here. We do a lot of crosswind, so the way they cut through the wind and just everything, they've been...
What dimensions are you on?
I am on 9L by 16 by 109. And so that'll probably be the board I race channel with. And yeah. It's been great. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. long. Everyone's gone so long. I'm loving my 7'6" still.
Yeah. Yep. It's what's really been kind of standing out to us is the leverage you get from a longer board. And we, as long as you go down in liters, and so the next board I order, I'll probably stay long, but go like 95 liters, 93 liters, maybe down to 90.
Well, what do you weigh, Hobie?
I weigh like 170 right now, 170 pounds. So I don't know what that is in kilos, but
yes.
Do the math.
Yeah, you must be, yeah. Was it like 75, I think it is. So you're like plus 20 liters, I think, or plus 20 to 30 liters of, I always like to do I times your body weight in kilos times 1.3. And for like intermediate to advanced riders, that's a pretty good ballpark of what volume you should be using for your board.
Oh, nice.
So like I'm 84 kilos and I'm using 105 liters. That's about 1.25 times my body weight. So maybe a little bit under volume, but I can get it, as long as you can get up, it's fine. But there's, I guess, as a bit of a guide, that's what I've been playing with lately.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So yeah. So I guess what we've been finding is that like, if you go longer, you get that leverage from the length and it's almost easier to pump as long as you're not going up in volume. So yeah, I guess like I was saying, go like down to like 95 liters, but stay like 8'8", 9'0". And it still feels like you're pumping a small board, and just the way these boards are weighted and balanced and where the foam is in it.
Yeah.
But the leverage is so nice, especially in a big channel. We've been loving it over here.
Yeah, awesome. Oh, you guys are the ones, you know, it's your backyard. You guys will definitely figure out what works best. It's cool. Cool to hear all the different directions everyone's been going. I know a friend of mine, Reedy, was just over there and he was riding like a 6'10". He rides like a 5'10" here in Australia. So he stepped up, but only slightly.
That's wild. I think the only guy that rides like under a 7-foot board is that guy Kiahi over here.
Yeah.
He rides like a 6'6", and it's hilarious. It's like a little short board and he's walking out with it. I'm like, dude, it's hilarious. Yeah.
I'm about to run out of reception, so I think we got to wrap it up. But it's been a pleasure chatting to you, Hobie. It's been really cool to sort of pick your brain and, you know, thanks for sharing everything that you have, and good luck for all your training and everything leading up to the race. And I'll be over there and we'll definitely spend some time together.
Yeah. We'll be over on Maui. Edo and I will be on Maui, like starting the 12th or something, all the way through M2M. So we'll have a good, just over a week over there. So yeah, we'll awesome. Definitely catch up with you guys.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate it. And we'll definitely be in touch before then. And yeah, thanks for sharing everything for the podcast.
Yeah, super stuff. Right on.